Hello and welcome everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Moscalzo and we are here for our monthly Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology Office Hours call. This is where you get to ask me anything you want and related to, of course, something related to health and nutrition and how you're going to help your clients. So I had a funny thing happen to me once when I said, yeah, ask me anything you want. And it was, I was doing a talk to I think it was juniors and seniors in high school, and they just were supposed to write in their questions, and I was supposed to answer their questions on this open, you know, in-person type of thing. And the funny thing is, like half of the questions were about sex. So I'm like, blah, 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 blah. What did they tell these kids? I was coming here to talk about nutrition, and they're asking me questions about sex. So you're welcome to ask me questions about sex if it has to do with sex hormones and sex hormone binding globulin and all the hormones and stuff. But anyway, I just thought that was a funny thing. So, Lynn is on managing the dashboard, and she'll be able to open up your line. She also has access to the questions, so if there's any questions that have been scheduled in advance or are on the chat right now, she can ask them. But it's probably best right now, if you have a question, raise your hand. And if you don't, then we'll go to the questions that have been typed in. So you just lead the way. Lynn, and there's something really noisy. Ouch.
Say that again.
I said there's something like a really noisy. So we have to wait 5 minutes. Ouch. I don't think you're going to hear me.
I can hear you.
All right.
Are you there?
So why don't you, I'm just going to go into the room. I've got my computer. I'll leave everything else in the car, and then I'll come back out. All right, so who's got a question?
It looks like, I'm looking to see where, I don't have any hands.
No hands, so star 2 raises your hand.
Okay. Wireless caller, Modesto, California, that would be Jane.
That would be Jane.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I'm walking indoors, so it could get quieter momentarily. I just have to
okay.
My key in.
So
right.
This is actually, are you ready? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So this is about, I've got a client right now who has a growth on her pituitary. You know, for many years, the doctors were telling her the pituitary was only for sexual hormones and, you know, or, fertility hormones, and that was it. And so they didn't tell her about all the other things that it interferes with, so she couldn't understand why she wasn't losing weight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I guess,
about that stuff in medical school.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, so I have been working with her for several weeks just to clean up her diet, clean up lifestyle, you know, reduce stress and that kind of thing. Moving her kind of to the next step, I mean, she was kind of able to lose a little bit of weight, but then she stopped. So it makes me think that, you know, obviously, you know, there's some major impairment going on with some of these hormones, especially the growth hormone. Getting produced and some other things. And I just don't know at this point, you know, are there tests that I should be running? I'm not quite sure where to kind of go from here with her, given that she's got this growth that obviously is not going away. She's not planning on getting it removed anytime soon. And it hasn't grown. It's been the same for about 20 years. You know, besides, you know, diet and lifestyle, you know, I'm not sure what to do and even would even know what test to actually run. Thyroid test, maybe, or? I don't hear anybody. Am I still on?
I'm here. I don't know what happened to her. She's gone.
I think we lost her.
I am of no help. I'm sitting here listening and going, that's a great question. Okay, so let's see. What would Dr. Rita Marie say? She would say, well, what do you think, Jane? Eleanor's here.
I don't know. My biggest thing right now, I'm more worried about the thyroid just because the pituitary, you know, it's stimulating sex on the thyroid. I have a funny feeling that the thyroid's not able to function properly.
Well, okay, I'm trying to think what she would say. You know, start with the digestion. And you were talking about her digestion and her eating.
I've already done that. Yeah.
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 And her blood sugar is... Oh, there she is.
There she is.
I got dumped. The last I heard was that you've been working with her to clean up her diet, and then I got dumped out. So I'm back.
Oh, okay. All right. So essentially, I've been working with her diet over the last few weeks. I'm really trying to clean up the digestive tract, and what she's doing really good as far as diet choices, you know, eliminating dairy and wheat and all the other, you know, potential allergy-producing things. The thing is that she is having a hard time losing weight still. That's really difficult for her. So obviously whatever this mass is on her pituitary is affecting her down the chain. So I'm not quite sure where to go from here. And I thought about maybe doing thyroid testing to see, you know, how is it affecting the thyroid? I'm not sure if that's the right way to go with this, what the next step would be.
Totally the right way to go. Way to go. Whenever somebody has a mass on the pituitary, really, you know, their choice is to remove it. And they don't like to do that unless it's really causing some serious issues. So you don't want to, you know, you want to be able to support everything downstream. This is where, you know, we understand what the root cause is, but we really don't have a lot we're going to be able to do about the root cause. So what we need to do is help the person to overcome the side effects of the root cause. So I would be looking at her thyroid. I would be looking at her all of her pituitary hormones, first of all. You know, in addition to TSH, you want to look at the rest of the thyroid. So you see what actually is she producing right now. Is she converting? Does she have antibodies? So you look at the whole thing like we normally would look at a thyroid, but we want to see what's going on there because she may need to be supported with some thyroid hormones or some you know, glandulars or something like that that's going to support it. Same thing with her. Her adrenals, because that's a big piece of it as well. You can, I think you're pretty sure you can look at ACTH. I think they often do ACTH as a challenge. But we're going to just assume that the pituitary hormones are probably not working real well. And
she has high prolactin.
She has high prolactin. That's very common. You know, it's interesting that you want to see what's happening with the pituitary, because in some cases, like depending on where the tumor is, is it an anterior or posterior tumor?
It's anterior.
It's anterior, okay. Yeah, you often see elevated prolactin in cases like that. You often see alterations in FSH, and it can go either way, that's the thing, depending on whether it's pressing on the tumor, pressing on the area of the pituitary and making it make more, or if it's draining it. So you see it both ways, actually. So it's not a bad idea to check the other pituitary hormones. So increased prolactin, which is that's going to affect her estrogen progesterone balance as well. So I'd be doing complete hormone testing on this woman, and especially since she's having trouble losing the weight, I'd be looking at thyroid and adrenals first. And, of course, blood sugar, right, which you can control.
Yeah, she's already doing that. I've already got her on blood sugar.
Yeah. So I would be looking at that. And, of course, like you know, I think you would work on the digestion, so that's going to help everything. But you can't just like, say, oh, well, she's got a pituitary tumor. What the heck, you know, thyroid's going to be off. We don't know how it's off, and we don't know if there's an addition to the pituitary problem in terms of stimulating the thyroid, but there may be some other issues going on with the thyroid itself. So I would do a full thyroid panel the way we normally would do an adrenal test. The way we normally would do, and just see what's out there and just really start treating what's manifested so that she can get her biochemistry and metabolism back. Yep.
Yeah, I know that we still have to work on her gut a little bit because she's on Zoloft and been on it for a while.
And that's going to affect everything, right? So if they perceive that she has a deficiency of serotonin, which I would assume that's what they're assuming if they put her on Zoloft, that often is caused by pituitary. You know, if you look at some of the thyroid stuff, especially the work that the Chief Karazian has done, really outlines that mechanism of you end up with decreased serotonin and dopamine, and it's kind of a circle that just fills back in. So it's very affected by the thyroid, and it very much affects the thyroid. So I'll be looking at all that. Might even be looking at when you get her digestion really cleaned up, and once you do, look at the thyroid. And if you're still seeing some issues, I would be looking at her amino acids.
Okay.
That can affect her neurotransmitters. Or something like the OAT test, which we had to talk about there.
Do people actually get that removed on the pituitary?
Oh, yeah, they oftentimes do. It depends on what kind of a tumor it is. Pituitary adenomas, yeah, they do. They oftentimes do. But it depends on where it is, whether it could be more dangerous to remove it because of how big it is, what's it located, what's it pressing on, don't want to risk all kinds of other things happening because it's just it's a tight little area up there in the brain. I mean, when you look at the pictures, it looks like, oh, there it is. It's all nice and discreet, and it's really not. So you really have to be careful, and they don't like to do brain surgery unless they have to. So it's a major thing she's having is thyroid issues and adrenal issues, and you can support her by giving her thyroid hormone or supporting her thyroid, however we do, or giving her glandulars for the adrenals, depending on which stage she shows up in. That often helps too. Sometimes they do very low-dose cortisone. Dr. Jeffries wrote a book on the magic of low-dose cortisone, not the kind of cortisone levels we give people for inflammation, but real physiologic replacement, right? It goes back to bioidentical hormone replacement, right? Body's not making it, and the underlying cause of why it's not making it is not something we want to deal with. So we're going to deal with bioidentical hormone replacement, whether it be thyroid, adrenal, pituitary. I don't think you can replace pituitary, but you have to do the thyroid, adrenal, sex hormones. So I would be really looking at all that and looking at getting on some good replacement therapy.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, totally. All right. Anybody else?
There is nobody on. Oh, wait. Tony has a question.
Good. Of course, Tony always has a question. Hi, Tony.
Hello.
I would be surprised if you didn't. I would be disappointed. I'm not going to say I'll be surprised because you're always apologizing for asking questions. I would be disappointed if Tony didn't have a question.
Oh, that's nice to know. Thank you. Okay.
You always have good questions, and it stimulates great discussion. So have at it.
This may not be a great question. It's probably one that we've talked about over and over again, but I have a client whose blood test came back vitamin D 13.4. I know that's stupid low, and I'm concerned. So he's taking vitamin code raw D3 5,000 IU a day, and based on a previous
how many of those is he taking?
Well, one, but based
just
on a previous
one?
Conversation, I got him up to two.
I put
that to be 10,000, right?
I'm thinking
we need the front loading, right? We need to front load them.
You need to front load them and get it up there, because otherwise it'll just take too long if you just try to. It'll take months and months. And you can, I mean, they've done studies where they'll put people on like 100,000, 200,000. You can get that vitamin D level up, and then you have to find the maintenance dose. Of course, you can't keep them on that, because within a couple of weeks on 100,000, you're going to have them up to 75, 80. Unless there's something other weird thing going on. It depends on whether he has the vitamin D receptor SNP, right? If he has that, then he may have to be on super high doses for long term. I had a guy on 20,000. I didn't have him on it. He stayed on it for a year and a half before he came back to see me. And it only went up to 65 on 20,000 for a year and a half. And his started at 8, which is pretty darn close to where your guy's starting. So, yeah, you never know, right? And I was just starting with the 20, and I would go 6 weeks to 2 months and just retest them to see how far up it you got, and you'll know whether you continue them on 20 or you bump it down or drop it down to 10.
I like that idea. Now, what do you feel about vitamin code, or should I do something that is liquid for him?
Well, the Mitolize does tend to work better. Somebody just told me about a new D, and what was the company? That Vitamin Code just came out with a liquid. G3, a vegan G3.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, because, okay. You know, mainly the thing with the micellar is that people who are vegan, you know, ethical vegans, they don't want to do the lanolin-based, which is what all the liquids are. So they won't do it. So then, you know, unfortunately, Vitamin Code came out with the 5,000 because they initially only had 2,000. And, you know, you'd have people taking 10 of those a day, and they don't really like to take 10 of those a day. So you can check into that as well. I haven't looked into that, so I don't know what the formulation really is. But I know that when it's liquid, when it's micellized, it does go up pretty quickly. But, you know, all the studies that the meds do, you know, all the science studies that are printed, they don't generally use the liquid. They just use their really crappy, actually, formulated stuff that has all kinds
and
of
it works fine.
And it still works. So it works. It's just, you know, you don't want to get all that other junk into people. And the micellized, I think the studies I've seen anyway, I haven't seen them like pitted against one or the other, but just, like,
you know what?
Philosophically,
he seems to be okay.
Should work.
He seems to be okay with taking this, so I'm gonna keep him with the Vitamin Code on raw D3.
Yes. But bump them up to 4 and then retest them at 6 weeks. Because the reason you want to retest them quickly is, well, number one, you don't want them to overdose. Unlikely that he's going to, given how low he is, but you never know. I did have one person who had an 8, and within 2 months, she got it up to 100 by taking 20,000. So
wow,
go really fast.
No.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
I'll retest in 30 days.
She was taking. Retest in, or 6 weeks. You know, at that level, probably 6 weeks would be fine. And that way, because when you retest, it gives you two bits of information. One, are you taking too much? But two, are you taking too little? Because if you have him on 20,000 for 6 weeks and it goes from 13 to 27, you got a long way to go, and you might do the whole 100,000 for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 100,000
like
a day for 2 weeks, right? But
most
people, you don't have to. But the studies have shown when they put people on 100,000, within 2 weeks, you can get them into the normal range.
Okay. And
most
people
don't want to sit there taking vitamin D all day.
Right. Yeah, that's a lot. And then to bump them down to a maintenance level.
It's all going to depend. And you're going to, as you do this, Tony, the more you do it, the more you're going to get a feel for it. I mean, I could tell you from my experience, but I can say that it's so variable. So when you get him back, if you go for 6 weeks and you test him and he's in the 30s, then I didn't take him up all that much. I would keep him probably at the same level, because figuring if he's in the 30s and then another 6 weeks, he could be the 60s, 70s. I wouldn't bump him up, but if after 6 weeks, he's in the 20s or teens, just high teens, if he's still at the same level after 6 weeks at 20,000, he's got a malabsorption problem. That brand isn't working for him in Britain.
I'm understanding.
He's going up.
Okay.
Yeah, or he has a receptor problem and he just needs a whole lot more. But if it doesn't go up much, I mean, if it doesn't go up more than, 10 points after 6 weeks at 20,000, I would probably be looking at a different form or a higher dose, and you can play with it.
Yeah.
I always tell people, we're going to be testing your vitamin D a lot over the first year if they start that low, because this is so critical for everything to get this balance. You know, and Jane, of course, look at your vitamin D and your person that we're talking about with the pituitary tumor. It becomes even more important when there's other things happening, like antibodies or a tumor or something, you know, a real pathology. Versus just, the guy's been indoors his whole life and doesn't go outside and, he's dark-skinned or whatever. Because, there's so many things that prevent or interrupt the vitamin D. If you're dark-skinned and you have low, it's going to take longer than if you have pale skin.
And he's African-American. Yeah, he's dark. And,
he doesn't
get out.
So the sun is not
going
to get out. And he's,
And he thinks driving out in a car, the sunlight's coming through the glass. Why am I not getting enough vitamin D?
it's not. Because, what they find is that the glass, oftentimes, unless it's special glass, is going to filter the UV, I forget which is it, the A's versus the B's. It's going to filter the good stuff out and the bad stuff comes through. So they've had people who've actually developed, it's not good, right?
Wow.
So you can just look it up. Just look up in Google. Just look on Medline and just say, the filtering UV A versus B filtering with car glass, windshield glass or whatever. You can show them. You'll find evidence to show them that, no, that's not enough.
Okay, that's great. And may I ask one more question related to that?
Sure.
Okay. Would you normally, for African-American patients or clients that don't get the vitamin D test, I'm stressing that they get that. Would you normally stress that for African-Americans?
If they're not, especially if they're not out in the sun on a regular basis. And I mean, you know, really 20 minutes, an hour or two, if 20 minutes having your hands exposed and your face exposed isn't going to do it. Because when they give you that general recommendation, oh, yeah, 20 minutes in the sun with skin exposed, it means most to your body exposed. And it depends on where they live, right? If he lives in Canada, he can lay naked the whole summer long, the whole winter long, and he's not going to get any vitamin D because it's just too far. North of Georgia, you get very little vitamins. The rays aren't strong enough to produce vitamin D for the most part. And then if you're darker, then, and if you're older, and if you're more sickly, then it's going to be less. So oftentimes you can help people to get their levels to where they need to be and then figure out the amount of sunlight that will maintain it. But sunlight alone is hard to use to take somebody from the pit up to optimal level. I mean, if they live at the equator, big difference, right? At the equator, people are said to get the equivalent of 20,000 IUs a day just from being outdoors and working.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah, absolutely. Good luck with that. It's amazing the kind of things that can improve when you get their vitamin D levels up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other questions?
Yes. Eleanor has one. And before I open her, she had put in the chat, Enterobacter species isolated, moderate and few cyst forms of Endolimax nana seen on trichrome stain and H. pylori's antigen detected.
Yes. I happened to glance at the thing, and I didn't look very closely at it, but I saw it come through, and I saw H. pylori. So that's the biggest thing, is to work on the H. pylori, because that can create an environment which is conducive for everything else to grow. So
I opened your line.
Can you hear me? Oh, you opened me? Am I
hello.
Here?
Hi. Yes.
And
hi.
Thank you, Ben, for reading that passage for me, saved me all the trouble.
If you're trying to, unfortunately, I've seen those names before, and the nana one is like questionable as to whether it really does cause problems. So if you get somebody with gut, you know, I always have to laugh because they'll say, oh, you know, this particular species doesn't cause problems. So, but if you have somebody who's having problems and you isolate that species, it probably is causing the problem. Like some people can have it and be asymptomatic, is what they're really saying. So just the presence of it doesn't mean you have symptoms. But if somebody has symptoms and it's present, then you want to work at eradicating it.
Yeah, so this is a situation where we're backing down from thyroid to blood sugar problems, and now we're trying to get to maybe where it all started with a leaky gut, which the indications that it might be a leaky gut is there's a lot of things, over 20 things that they tested allergic to, right? So. But otherwise, they're not experiencing anything but a bloated, you know, the belly goes up and down, and there's a gluten sensitivity going on. So knowing that, I know that H. pyloric is problematic, and I'm not quite sure because it seems like a lot of the therapy is this triple therapy stuff that's actually more problems.
There's herbal stuff that I've worked with. No, I've worked with herbal stuff that works.
Okay.
I have helped people to get over it, and, you know, usually it could take 3 months, but there are specific protocols that you can follow. And I've had people go on the triple therapy and not get the results. So that's not a guarantee either. I've had them, you know, have to go back on and on and on it. So, you know, or come to talk to me after they've been on and on it. So good. So he's got, the thing is, that the H. pylori can contribute to leaky gut. It bores holes. It, like, digs a little, puts its tentacles in, and it digs holes into the gut.
I know. It's really gross.
It's horrible. And you got to get their family members tested, too, because it could be transmitted back and forth. It could be transmitted through, you know, utensils, through kissing, through, you know, all the usual routes of transmission. So usually you want to check the whole family, even if the family's asymptomatic. If they've got it, you need to treat it. Okay? That's one thing. Because they're especially going to be susceptible as they're trying to eradicate it. If somebody else has it, but they're just, you know, asymptomatic at this point, they're passing it back and forth. It's a constant strain in the system trying to kill it, but it's still there.
Okay.
So that's one thing. Okay. So obviously, gluten sensitivity, you've got to get the person off their gluten for sure, 100%, and then any allergens that show up, get them off of it at least for the period while you're working this, and then you can slowly add them back because you don't want to add gasoline to the fire.
Right.
Right? And the more you add those foods and have those foods, that creates an immune system reaction, which is going to further damage, which is going to, you know, create a very comfortable nest for the H. pylori. So we need to make it uncomfortable for the H. pylori. Okay? There's a number of things. There is a tea called Matula tea that is said to be the company that makes it, only one company that makes it, which always makes me a little leery, but the company that makes it states that they will do, if you do the pretest and then you do the therapy for 2 months and then you go back and retest and it's not gone, they will give you your money back. So that's, you know, that's a big claim. It is very expensive. It's like, I don't know, it's like $100 a month for this tea. But
and
it's going to eradicate H. pylori.
How do you spell
M-A-T,
it?
M-A-T-U-L-A.
U-L-A, okay. I think I have heard of it or seen it at fairs, that people pushing it. So, okay.
Okay. So that's one thing. The other thing is, and why my mind just go blank. I talk about it all the time. There's a product that Designs for Health makes that has it in it, and it's isn't that funny? Like, it just, I see it, and it's out of, it just went out of my mind. I'll give it to you in a second. Let me just look it up real quick. Let me just get my computer out of airplane mode, and I can give you doses and the whole bit. But there is a Designs for Health formulation that has that in it, and why am I going to play? Lynn, you must know what I'm talking about, right? Okay, so I'm on, so let me just look it up. Most common thing for H. pylori, and it's drawn as strong on the body. So bizarre. Too much traveling, too much sleep.
And it's not going to hurt. If the whole family member falls protocol, it's not going to hurt anybody, right?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't. I mean, it's an expense, of course. That's the only thing. You know, you got to pay the money to do it.
Yeah.
But, no, it's just not going to be. Okay, here we go.
The tea, how many times a day? Once a day?
I'd have to look to see. I think it's a couple of times a day.
Okay.
I think it's a couple of times a day. Let me just pull something up here. I don't know if I have it in my files on this computer, but I had a nice little protocol that I can post. And we have it in, it'll be coming out in the digestive module, but right now, okay, here we go. If I go to... My Dropbox is supposed to sync, so let's keep our fingers crossed that it syncs, and I have all my files here. Okay, so Dropbox is there. Okay, so if I go to...
What is it you're looking for?
I'm looking for the name of that particular herb that is very effective with, and it just went out of my mind. I don't understand why. I talk about it all the time. It's like it's right there at the tip of my tongue, and I'm looking for it here.
And what's it used for?
H. pylori.
Oh, well, black walnut, or oregano oil.
All of those are good, but they're not specific. They're not the ones I'm looking for.
Grapeseed extract.
No. and as soon as I say it, it's mastic gum.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
Yeah.
You can get that as a cream.
But you're saying Design for Health sells it? Design for Health
sells it? Yeah, Design for Health has a formulation that's specifically for pylori that has the mastic gum, and it's got, I think, some of those others that Lynn just mentioned. I don't remember which ones. Oftentimes I'll have people, especially when she's got all this other stuff, I'll put them on something like Allergy Research has one called Tricyclin. T-R-I-C-Y-C-L-I-N. It's got the black walnut, berberine, artemisia.
Yeah, artemisia is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially for the parasitic stress. So when you're taking these things together, and then you've also got to do work to help heal the leaky gut. So having them on, you know, like the glutamine or slippery elm and things like that for soothing the leaky gut are important as well.
Okay, it's really a silent problem. He's not really experiencing anything noticeable. It's
well, he's having bloating.
Bloating, yes. And I can tell that he's had gluten. The bloat goes right there. So.
And this isn't going to get fixed if he keeps doing gluten.
Yeah, okay.
Or any of the other of the 20 things he's allergic to. So he's really got to get him off of the gluten. You got to convince him, you know, show him that this is a serious thing. Do some research, look it up. You know, it'll talk about it. It can contribute to, I have somebody whose headaches went away. Not only did her digestive stuff, but these chronic headaches, migraines she'd been having, and she tried all kinds of stuff. And forgot, got rid of the H. pylori.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yep. And she'd done a test before. So you did the BioHealth, right? The BioHealth is the most sensitive as far as I've seen. I can't say that I've done, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different ones. But what I've seen is, and especially this one woman, actually, she had done the Genova, and it came back negative for H. pylori, and we were going on. I'm like, I have this feeling that it's H. pylori, and I started researching it. And it's like, yeah, oftentimes it's hidden. It's hard to come through. So we did the BioHealth, and it came through. And it took, the next time we did it, I think we did it again in like 2 to 3 months. And I just had her continue on some of the stuff after it was no longer in the test, just to be sure. And she's doing great now.
And when you did the test, looking at the results that you see here, would you just do the H. pylori, or would you do the whole thing again? Are the other ones? Should we be worried about the other ones? Are they really? I know. I saw.
Well, that's why I said do the tricycline with it.
Tricycline.
Allergy Research Tricycline. And it's especially, you know, you can find a formula that's easier than giving them, like, lots of bottles. Unless there's somebody that's super sensitive. You know, you have a lot of these people, so every time they take something, it's like, oh. So you have to get them individually until you can figure it out. Because if you have a formula and they react to one thing in the formula, you can't give it to them. But if it tends to be somebody, you know, guys tend to be more, you know, they don't just, either they don't pay attention, they're not tuned in enough to know, or they just tend to, you know, whatever. But it's much easier for compliance to get them to take a formula. So Tricycline from Allergy Research, and then the Design for Health. I'm trying to get my things to be coming up. The internet doesn't seem to be.
And if they're on any anything for the blood, you know, if they're on the chrome, all the blood stuff. No, I'm sorry, the blood sugar stuff. Should I let that continue also, or back that off for a while?
If their blood sugar is, no, you don't ever want to stop any of that stuff, right? If they're on stuff for blood sugar and it's maintaining, the way that you want to get off of it is the way I described in the IRSPT course, was you go through that process of slowly backing off. So if they're on 800 micrograms of chromium a day, you go to 600 and have them watch their blood sugar. And if it doesn't put a dent in the blood sugar, stay nice, then you can back it off to 400. And you do that very gradually with that stuff. And you want to find the minimum effective dose.
Okay, well, they're not. Right? The blood sugar is not in good shape now, so I wouldn't back them off.
No, then
that.
Don't touch it. Don't back it off of it. No, right.
Yeah,
right.
I'd only back off if they're if this is going to interact with this or interfere with
nope.
this anyway. So
nope. Absolutely.
Okay.
I would. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's like the blood sugar is not in good shape because why? You know, he's not compliant with the gluten, staying off the gluten and other allergies. So,
yeah.
Right, that's. Until you get that going, you just keep putting the fuel. The gasoline goes on the fire. The fire continues to burn, and it burns. You remember how? Oh, I don't. You didn't see it. You weren't at Shine, but Tom O'Brien had this great description of the ping pong balls in the field, and it's just setting off the mouse traps. It's like all it takes is that one little bit, and it just like goes ping, 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 and all the mouse traps go crazy. It's a great visual. He needs to get somebody to make him a video on that. It was just awesome.
Okay. Okay, good. And the dosages are probably on the bottles for these things.
Yeah, I would just start with those doses. Right, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. And the other thing is I just want to quickly go through. I have someone with candida, and I'm pretty sure I want to tell them to get off sugar, to get off all the yeast-containing foods like alcohol and peanuts, and then – you know, I'm thinking they need to take something to kill the candida, and then we need to repopulate the gut and probably support the liver through the process. Is berberine the only thing that you know of to give them to kill the candida, or do you have another?
Well, that same stuff, the tricycline, is good because a lot of times you don't get rid of the candida because they also do have a parasite, even if it's a low grade, right? It may not be something as horrible as the amoebas or something like that, but they could. So that's why I like the tricycline because it has the berberine. And then I always like to add, I usually add oregano oil when I do the tricycline.
Right.
But yeah, berberine is good, caprylic acid, even just getting them on a little bit more coconut oil, that has good stuff for killing off candida. And everybody's a little different, right? So you try a variety of things and you see how it works, but start with a core. That tricycline is pretty darn good.
Okay, good. That's a new thing for me, so that's good. And as far as repopulating the gut, would you wait or would you do that immediately, start them on inner echo or something like that to repopulate the gut and get more good guys in there?
Yeah, usually I do them concurrently because there's a lot of studies will say, the fungal antifungal naturals won't kill off the good populations, but it could. You run that risk. So I think that in general, everybody should be having a good daily dose of probiotic stuff unless there's some reason not to. So I'd say, have them do that. And then once they're finished with that whole protocol, do that a couple of months, rebuild, then I would probably put them on a what I like to call the implantation, the probiotic implantation where you do really high doses for a week to two, and then you find a maintenance dose to just really firmly. But if you go and do these processes and you're not supplying a consistent stream of probiotic bacteria, then it's not going to get it well as much, I suppose.
Okay. And what would you give them to support the liver to not overwhelm it if you are successfully killing off all these critters? Just milk thistle or would you?
You could do milk thistle. Have them eat burdock. Get some burdock root. That's good. Dandelion root tea. Depends on how willing the person is to do stuff, but dandelion in the form of a tea can be really, really powerful. You get some dandelion roots and you do a strong decoction, you can use that liquid as a base for smoothies or juices or sauces or whatever. That's a great support. Burdock you can just get as a food at the store, so the more you can get as a food, the better.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's others,
Yeah. Okay, good. That's basically the four steps, right, to do those four things?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Super. Yeah, you're on the right track.
Okay.
So for some reason, it's not letting me on the free Wi-Fi because it's not verifying my name. Isn't that weird? They must have my name in the wrong world. Okay. All right. Anybody else? Any other questions typed in?
Yep. Jane has another question. She has somebody with a gallbladder with 14%. My brain just shut down. Where did it go? Yeah, gallbladder function is 14%.
Whoa. How did they measure that?
I opened her lined up.
Yeah. Good question. I don't know. I'm actually going to meet with this client next week.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, can you bring back gallbladder function?
I mean, it depends. I think if the gallbladder is still there, there's a good chance. But it depends on what it's destroyed. You know, a lot of times people with long-standing thyroid issues have gallbladder problems, and depends on how far along it is. Is it at 14% because they removed part of it? I've never heard of removing part of it.
No, it's still there.
It's still there. All right.
Yeah, she has a whole plethora. This is a whole case study that I don't want to get into yet because I don't have all the information. But she's got cysts on her liver, and I think also on her kidneys. She's got some kind of rare liver disease. So it's pretty much, I think, just the gallbladder's kind of taken a toll in everything that's going on. She's getting tested for thyroid in the next couple of weeks. So we'll see. We suspect that there are thyroid issues. But I was just kind of curious about the gallbladder. Like, you know, can you bring this function back? I was talking to somebody at Premier Research, and they were saying, yeah, it's possible. I was just kind of wanting to get your opinion on it.
Yeah, my feeling is generally, you know, depends on if it's specific destruction. But my feeling, I have a lot of faith in the body's ability to heal when given the right environment. And, you know, I would never say never to somebody like, oh, no, you can't heal from that. First of all, I'd want to know how did they measure that. What did they do to measure gallbladder function? I mean, there may be some type of tests that I don't know about that measure gallbladder function on a percentage basis. So I'd be curious to see. Maybe they measure bile outflow. I don't know. I don't know how they measure that. You set that up. Okay. I'll never get on the internet. And do a quick search and say, hey, measuring gallbladder function.
I mean, I know, like, the liver regenerates super easy, you know, so if it's not under huge stress. But I was just kind of curious, is the gallbladder.
My guess would be it could, because if it's an impairment, if they're measuring function and there's no destruction, they haven't seen tumors on it, that there's not actually been damage to it. My guess is that functionally, right, it's kind of, gallbladders tend to lose function because they're sluggish. They've got sludge in them. They've got blockages in the flow of the bile. Because they really, it's just a sack that stores stuff, right? It doesn't have a lot of metabolic function. It mainly stores. It produces. It squirts out some alkalizing bicarbonate, and it squirts up. But it's a sack that stores this stuff. So that's why I'm confused about how they're measuring gallbladder function.
Yeah, I don't.
And usually, that would be a blockage.
Yeah, my theory is on this one is that it's really a liver issue, and she's probably not even producing bile, which is why it's probably not even working. It's probably showing that it's working, it's probably just not getting bile. But then given that they have to take it out, it tells me that it still is a viable organ, or because they take gallbladders out all the time.
All the time, whether they need to or not, right? So it probably doesn't have a whole bunch of stones in it, or they'd be pulling it out.
Yeah, I don't think it's stones. There's not stones there. I have a funny feeling this is a liver issue, and we'll see when her test results come back.
Yeah. And if she's got liver cysts, then, you know, for sure there's something that's impairing the liver function. So it's regenerating it and, you know, reducing the toxic load, supporting it. She should be supporting digestion with bile acids if the liver and gallbladder are not being cooperative with that, just so she doesn't develop downstream stuff because she needs the fat.
Right. Well, and that's the whole thing is that she can't tolerate. She's actually got rhabdomyolysis. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
So that, and she's had Sjogren's, but yeah, she doesn't, that's the whole thing is that it's hard for me. She doesn't want to eat any fat. because
of course not, because she isn't. So get her on some lipase and bile acids. You're going to have to go easy with the bile acids because she can end up with diarrhea if you go too fast. You have her do those. You have her take a few bites of the meal. You have her take those. She probably needs stomach acid. If she does, then you do the same thing. But you have her take the bile acids and a good enzyme that has a good amount of lipase. The Ness enzymes all have, you can get all the individuals. So they might even have one that has some of the support for liver gallbladder function along with the lipase. But, you know, if she can get it, she can digest the fat. You might start it with coconut oil even, so that it's very easy to get. The MCTs don't require the emulsification from the gallbladder. It just gets right into the bloodstream. So you can get her to do a little bit of fat that way, right, and then support her fat digestion.
Okay, great. That's helpful.
Okay, good.
Quick question about all the nutrients that you talk about. Is there a list, like one list of, like, you're the most common nutrients that you recommend and where to purchase them? Is there, like, a spreadsheet somewhere?
I don't know that we have one in Before Be Gone. So there's definitely one, and all the ones we mentioned for blood sugar are in a document. And I can't get on the internet right now, so I'm not sure.
So they're specific to the module they're in, right? I've seen
that. Specific. But I've been talking about, I have that on one of my to-dos, is like having a master sheet, which has all the stuff. And that would be, it would be a maintenance kind of nightmare, too, because it's constantly
right.
Like, wow, I just found this brand new whatever. I really like this, and add it to it. So it could be, I think the Google Doc idea would be the best, because then we don't have to be creating documents and uploading to the site. It's just a matter of having it open. But I think
right.
We could probably start with the ones from Before Be Gone, because I have the B vitamins in there and a lot of the minerals, and I have brands. But I still need to go in there and update it, because there's a few new brands that I've discovered that I like a lot. So I think it'd be a great idea to have one like that, just a list of all the nutrients and then what's some good sources. But, you know, it's always an issue of how do you format it, because a spreadsheet, it really needs to be a database. Really does. It needs to be a database that you go in and you look up the particular nutrient and then find out the list and everything. Because there's you know, there's branching and there's interactions, and you think about that.
That's a big job.
My programmer's mind starts to spin when I, you know, think about these things. But it would be nice. It would be nice to have, yeah. But to start with the Before Be Gone one, because it has a lot of good stuff in it.
Yeah. And the cafe one has a bunch of stuff in it, too.
Yep. 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 And we'll have one for the digestion soon. All right. Good question. Anybody else? I'm going to have to call the front desk before this call is over so I can get on the next call with internet. It's not taking my password or whatever. Serving off now. Great. It's telling me I don't want them not here.
Let's see. So Jane asked that. So Vanessa says, and I'm not sure what this is about, maybe you do, but she says, yes, it's a spray. And then she says it's lichen 1,000 IU per spray.
Oh, that's right. So Vanessa was the one that told me about it. Thank you, Vanessa. My mind goes into this overload of I see like a gazillion people. I talk to a gazillion people in a day, and I'm like, somebody told me about this. So it was you, right? Thank you, Vanessa. So it's made from lichen. That's great. So lichen, you know, is a great source of vegan vitamin D3. Cool. Thank you.
And then, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Sequoia says, what is your opinion of excipients and Better Bones Balance formula? Cros Carmelo sodium vegetable stearate, hydroxypropyl methyl cellulose, glycerin, silica, and cellulose.
Yeah, so cellulose is, you know, cellulose is that you got to have cellulose to make the capsules, so that's not a big deal. I don't like stearates because they're done to make it cheaper for the manufacturer to do the product. It coats it coats the capsules. If it's just in the capsules, it's one thing, but oftentimes they do it on the nutrient itself. So if you've ever opened up a capsule of something that has magnesium stearate in it and dropped it into a glass of water, you're going to see all the little, it won't dissolve. It won't dissolve. It just, everything sits there. It might dissolve if you put it in apple cider vinegar, which if it does, then you know good. This, you know, it's going to work. It's going to break apart in the stomach. But it is usually it's a vegetarian, but it doesn't have to be. Stearic acid. I think a 9-carbon. I can't remember if it's a 9-carbon. It's a short chain fatty acid. But it's done. It's combined with magnesium, and it coats the capsules. And I don't like it. And that's why I try to use companies that don't have that, like Pure Encapsulation, Thorn. I think Metabolic Maintenance is another one that doesn't use it. And there's a number of companies that don't use it. Premier Research for sure doesn't use it. Premier Research, Bob Marshall, thinks that stearates are poison and they're cancerous. And I haven't seen any real clear evidence that they're really that dangerous. But, you know, you get somebody, I'll tell you a quick story about somebody who has just taken a ton of supplements in every meal. She's having diarrhea. I'm like, you're pooping away everything you're taking in. It's a big waste of money. But I need this and I need that. We're having a hard time. So just convinced her to just stop. Diarrhea was worse at night. Just drop all the supplements from, you know, after lunch and on. And her diarrhea cleared up, and we looked through. And it wasn't even so much that the stuff she was taking was that much different with what she was taking earlier in the day, but so many of those nutrients had mag stearate in it. And, you know, magnesium can contribute to increased gut motility. So I don't know if that was what the cause was. When I looked it up, it certainly could have been attributed to it. It's just, I try not to. But now, I make exceptions when there's a specific formula that is really appropriate for someone, and it's hard to get those nutrients all separate, and it's just been tried and true. And, you know, it's like some of the better bone stuff is pretty good. But I just don't think it's, when they add all that stuff, they're not paying as much attention to the quality of their nutrients as they should. If you look at anything from Premier Research or Thorne, you're not going to find that stuff in there. And they may have leucine and isoleucine as fillers. Those are amino acids, branched chain amino acids that can be used as fuel. So I don't see that as a problem. I don't know much about cross-caramelose, but I know that it's in stuff. I think it's more of a coloring, quite frankly. But I don't know enough about it. I would certainly look at those individual nutrients up. But I just try to stay away from stuff with a lot of excipients unless, like I said, it's something really special. And then I'll go for it. I just wish more and more companies would get with it and not put all of that stuff in.
And then your bars, they're not available in stores yet, right? Is the plan to have them in there?
Well, my goal would be to at least, you know, start with Whole Foods here. Like, we haven't even really finished the design. So we had this quick and we picked a name. It wasn't really, you know, we weren't 100% sure about the name. We picked the name and we picked the design and had it quick because we wanted it done for Shine. So those are what's available now. It's going to take us like 5 or 6 weeks to get the whole design thing. And I can't go in and offer it in the store until I have, you know, the real pretty boxing and the nice labeling and the whole bit. So as far as getting them in stores, it's a big job to do that. And I could certainly have somebody approach our local Whole Foods and get them in there. But I'm not sure. I think it just might always be available on our website. So it's a big business decision to decide to do something like that, and I'm not sure if that's the direction that I want to head.
Eleanor wants to know, do you have any books left for Shine?
I found one. I don't know if it's complete, but I did find one, Eleanor, after we spoke, but I left town, so I didn't get a chance to let you know where to look through to see if it was complete. But that was the only one that we had. The other thing we can do is we can make an arrangement with our fulfillment house because they'll do stuff on demand. If we just give them the Shine book and say, hey, how much does it cost to do this, and then be able to print it and send it to you. So that's certainly something we can look into. But I haven't had a chance to really pursue that. That could be easy because we already have it in digital form. We just hand it to them and say, here, we want it in a binder. This is what it should look like. and then you could pay direct. You go on my site, you pay directly to them, well, to us, but then we pay them, and then they ship it to you. So that's where we're at right now.
And she says thank you.
Sure.
Sequoia wants to know, if you are off the foods for a while, will you get an accurate result for Cyrex Array 3 and 4?
You know, that's a good question. The blood tests tend to be less, if you've been off of them for quite a while, no, you probably won't. Probably won't. It's because the blood antibodies are pretty specific for exposure, right? The stool antibodies, on the other hand, tend to be, it's almost like I think of them as the little soldiers sitting in the mucous membrane waiting to jump. And they tend to be active. But once they're in the bloodstream, it's usually in the bloodstream because you've had an active exposure, whether it be, you know, over the last few months, 6 months, 3 months, 1 month. So I don't know that you will get as accurate. And I think the best way to find out would be to ask them, to contact Cyrex and ask.
And will the bars be available in Canada? So even if you order them off. Okay.
If you order off the site, the company that we use that makes them and distributes them will not ship outside of the U.S. So I think what we're going to have to do is, if there is a big demand in Canada, is to find out if we can just ship them. There is a big deal getting stuff into Canada and getting stuff across the border. I keep hearing people say that everything that they order from a U.S. company, the customs tax on like a $50 customs fee. So one of the things that you could do, and I'd have to ask, one of our people in ERC, Mary, she lives in Toronto, and I can't remember what it was that I hooked her up to, but I found this thing, and I can't look right now. I feel so paralyzed here because usually I'm able to look things up. I can't do it on my iPad either because it ran out of minutes. Anyway, there's a way that you can get a U.S. address, and there was a company that I have to look up in my notes on Mary's file to see, but that she ended up setting it up so when she orders stuff from the U.S., she has it shipped to that address, and then they somehow get it to her, and I'm not sure exactly what the process is. But right now the company that does it won't ship outside of the U.S., so they're only available in the U.S. Unfortunately, I know that we didn't have any trouble. We shipped the box to Stacy when we first got them, but we wrote on it with gift. They said, "What is this?" We said, "Gift." So they didn't open it. They didn't bother. They didn't add any customs charges to it. I don't know if we could get away with that just mail to customers. It's gift. We might start to, you know, raise a red flag and get in a whole lot of trouble if we did that. But it was a gift because she was. You know, she's on our team, and we wanted to thank her, and we sent her a box of ours. So good questions, and I'm just going to have to defer on giving you an absolute answer on that, unfortunately.
Phyllis says, it is the ejection fraction as measured by a nuclear medicine HIDA scan, and then it says normal is about 39%.
Okay, so it is the ejection. So it's how much it's actually. So Jane's thing about maybe it's really the liver and the liver's not producing enough, so the gallbladder doesn't have enough bile to eject. So that would make sense. Thank you, Phyllis.
Let's see. There are no hands up. And let's see. Sequoia wants this. Maybe Sequoia can be the distributor in Canada.
Oh, well, that could work, Sequoia, because we could just get, you know, a big box and ship it to you, and then that could work. Let's chat.
There you go.
To take on. Yeah.
And then she says, thank you for all the answers.
Oh, you're welcome.
Let's see.
Very welcome.
Phyllis also sent, I meant normal is 30%.
Normal is 30%. What did Jane say? The person said it was like 17% or something?
14.
14?
Her gallbladder was 14%.
Yeah, so you think, Phyllis, that's what she's saying, is that And that 14% is that ejection fraction is 14%.
Right.
And normal would be 30 or more.
And Sequoia says, I'm game.
Okay, let's chat.
All right.
Yeah, we'll see what that involves.
Let's see, no hands up, no more Q&A questions, and nothing else on the chat.
All right. Well, then I'm going to say bye-bye. I'm going to, because I have half an hour before the next call, and I'd like to call the front office and see why I'm not being able to get on the Internet. So I can do that for the next call. Great questions, as usual. I love all the questions, and it's going to be awesome.
I do, too.
Really going into detail. Yeah, these are great calls. We just go into stuff in taxes, you know, not taxes, but it keeps my mind stimulated to go through and pull it all together. And, you know, the more you guys learn, the more you'll be able to do the exact same thing. It's like the more you understand about how things work, the more you can figure out what's going on when something goes wrong and what the possibilities are. So just keep up asking the questions. And, Tony, don't ever apologize for the questions. Like I said, I would have been very disappointed if you didn't ask me a question. So, great. Thank you all very much. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.